Hello and welcome to Learning from Leaders. Each episode, we interview a new leader for a behind-the-scenes look at what makes them tick. In each interview, we aim to understand the routines, habits, and even the failures that got them into the position they're in today. So wherever you are in your leadership journey, we hope you enjoy. Without further ado, this is Learning from Leaders. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Learning from Leaders. Today, I am lucky enough to be with Jude Thompson, who is the president and CEO of Delta Dental Kentucky. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you.
All right. Well, the first question I always like to lead off with is just kind of talking about the beginning of your leadership journey. So you can kind of define it however you want to define it, but how long have you been in a leadership role?
Well, this is going to take a bit, but grew up in Loretta and Barkstown area out in the rural part. My family were all entrepreneurs, and my father was 50 when I was born. So when I reached age 17, Dad's health wasn't great, and he said, "Son, what are you going to do for a living?" And I informed him I was going to be a professional basketball player. And he said, "No, to feed you." And he goes, they make good money. He goes, "No." He goes, "I got to get you established in a business. And what would you do?" And so I thought about it, and I said, "Pizza." So on May 24th, 1980, my senior year, we opened Mario's Pizza in Mount Washington. And so the leadership program, the reason why that started for me is my father passed on April 8th before mm-hmm. that store opened. And we had borrowed $150,000, which mm-hmm. I did not have. Mm-hmm. And so I can remember Farmers Bank in Barkstown saying, "What are you going to do?" And I said, "Well, I've gotten a basketball scholarship, and I'm going to do both." And so that's what we're going to do. And so it was a baptism by fire. And I tell people, I don't know if I would replace it at all. I mean, I'd love to have had my father live, but I had to grow up. Mm. I did have older brothers and sisters. I wasn't left out there all alone, but it was it's an interesting time to be 17, 18 and having to hire mm. and people that don't work out, let them go, that are always older than you.
Yeah.
And it was humbling. I couldn't even serve the beer to the patrons because I wasn't old enough to do it. So we did that. And by the time I was 20, we had three of those. We had one in Barkstown and one in Marion County. And I did play basketball a couple of years, and then I quit school and all that, and ran my businesses and got into many warehouses. So I think the leadership job for me really started in that 17th, 18th year, but I was always around brothers, sisters, mothers, and fathers that ran businesses. So I think I kind of grew up around
it. Wow, that's unbelievable. That's such an interesting story. Yeah. What about, so I'm always interested in this because I think it sort of is telling in a way. How do you start your day? What's that routine look like? Do you have are you regimented? What does that look like?
It is. So, you'll see around here in my office, I'm a paper calendar guy. I like to do things. So when I look at my calendar for the next day, I'll go ahead and lay my clothes out so I don't have to think about what it's like my uniform for the day, whatever it needs to be. I'll check the weather and see what it's going to be too, and so we'll coordinate that. So when I get up, I don't want to think about that to scramble. So it's a little bit of prepared time, and I try to build 2 hours in before I go to work or leave for work or what have you, because I want quiet time. And for people that could be their morning prayers, that's me. Some other people, they need to meditate or what have you. I'd like to read a little bit. I don't, that's not the first thing I do. I don't go to my emails. But I do want to catch up. I may read the Courier Journal online or something like that. Have my quiet time, make a coffee, do those kind of things. And when I was younger, now in my 50s, but I've done this really since I was in the 20s. I have friends and people tell me they get up, they shower, and they're out. I'm like, I can't do it. Mm. It's so I need a couple of hours to get ready for my day, think it out, plan it out, there we go.
Okay. So. Great. Awesome. I know that for this next question, I know if I gave you your whole life, that would be a whole long laundry list of things. But if we were just kind of looking at the past 5 years, what would you say are the beliefs, behaviors, habits that have impacted you most positively?
So one, after I left Papa John's and I took a few years off, I was just doing board work. One of the things that allowed me to do, because at 17, 18, And I worked before that. I was always involved in the business. What you do is kind of be, you start to think without realizing that's who you are. And when I was able to step away from day-to-day work in 2012, it gave me a chance to realize what I do is what I do. It's not who I am. You know, I'm a father of five, and there's a lot of things that I'd like to define me other than what I do. I love Delta Dental. I love the folks I work with. I enjoy that deeply. They're really good people. But it took a little bit to separate myself from what the business, because I want this business is going to go on after my time's up. But so that was probably the biggest thing. The other thing I would say, if I got to pick two things, was just realizing as that what I put into my body is really how you're going to feel. Mm-hmm. And so I went through kind of a transformation with food and diet because I was having inflammation and, you know, 8-10 Advil a day because you had aches and pains, and now nothing. And it's really all from diet, mm-hmm. what foods are or not. And so the tip for me was Whole 30. Mm. So I tried Whole 30, but I never got off of it. So that's just the way I eat.
Okay.
And so it's kept me feeling better because, Scott, without, if you don't feel good or you have, it's hard to be a good parent. It's hard to be a good employee. It's hard to be good at anything. I mean, I've heard it said many times, your wealth is your health. And it's very true. It's very true. So those are the two things that probably have been most impactful to me.
And did you find there were sort of, so aside from, you know, stepping down from Papa John's, did you find that there were sort of other catalysts that forced you to kind of have that realization about, you know, kind of your identity in that? Or what did that look like?
Yeah, it's a very fair question. Because I had come from 19 years at Anthem, and I was president of Kentucky, and then I go into the co-CEO job with John over at Papa John's, and it becomes your identity, and people in the community would see it that way. And when I decided to, it was time, I just didn't feel whole inside. I knew it was time. And but it was a mental warfare, I would say, which could you come out and people say, why'd you quit? You're 48. I was like, yeah, I'm searching a little bit about the meaning of what I should be doing in life. And so there were some blue moments, but, you know, I made sure to stay around good people. And, you know, I could give a lot of credit to people like Greg Dietrich, who runs Iron Bell Ministries now, but he was president of KFC Worldwide. And he did much the same thing. He quit at a younger age when most people are getting a CEO job. He decided to turn it down and do what his calling was. And so I had people like that I could call on, and you know, it helped. And then as the days and weeks went by and I got focused on really getting better at that, I went to a lot of you could say secular or Christian. I went to boot camps. I went to anything that was available that I could get access to, because I had the time to try to fill up this hole I had in me about saying, you know, having a title and getting paid this or that. It just wasn't meaningful for me at that point in my life, and it's still not. I'd much rather I was able to, reset and have a write these last couple of chapters a little differently than the path I was going on.
Well, thanks for sharing about that. Yeah, I just was interested because I think, you know, that might be a place that, especially folks who find themselves in a important position, maybe that's a common thing for them as well. So I think that's really interesting.
I've heard it. You know, you'll see it with athletes when the cheering stops, I think is one of the books, and how it's a little bit, we didn't have 50,000 people cheering me on. That's not what I'm saying. But when that's what you're trained to do, or you think you're trained to do, or if you're fairly good at it, and then all of a sudden you make a decision to stop, you can second guess yourself. But I knew something needed to be addressed, and so that's what we did.
That's really interesting. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, what about and I asked this question this way on purpose, because different than maybe what's your favorite book. Well, what's the book that you've given as a gift the most?
We'll give you one of those today. Okay. I probably bought a couple of thousand copies and taught it. It's a little, it's got some age on it. It's probably 2005, Blue Ocean Strategy. And so the two authors that wrote that, it is a short stories of different companies that have made a little shift. And so I'll take you through it, because I used to teach it a little bit. So if I were to ask you who the father of the automobile is, would you know who that is?
I probably would say Henry Ford.
Right, which you're in the 99.9% of the world. But Henry Ford, there's actually over hundreds of car makers around the world, but they were very, very fancy and unreliable, and they were for the super wealthy, and they were tearing up the roads for the horse and buggy. And so they were so unique, and some of these cars had hair curlers in them, and you had to have an engineer and a mechanic to travel with you. They'd break down. And Henry Ford did a simple thing. That's not my competition. I needed something more reliable and less expensive than the horse and buggy. That's why the Model T was black and didn't have options. And he became known as the father of the automobile, because he made it to the masses, and it changed. And so little things, Blue Ocean, the whole reference to that is if Coke drops the price of their Coca-Cola by 5 cents and Pepsi follows it, we're in a commodity war and there's blood in the water. That's just no good. Blue Ocean, clear sailing, means you render your competition really meaningless because you carved out. And there's all kinds of stories in there, whether Swatch watches. Swatch watches was a fashion accessory. Most people that had those had 6, 7, 8, happened to tell time. So there's all of these wonderful, the circus, Ringling Brothers. Someone came out and said they weren't going to have animals, which there were PETA and everything else, and there was insurance woes, and you were having to pack up and travel, and how many years does it take to train these animals before they don't hurt you? And kids were getting into video games and trinkets and trash, and clowns were going, and that book spelled the demise, which Ringling Brothers did fold their tents last year. But someone came out with a circus with no animals, no Star of the Big Top, charged about 10 times as much for the ticket price. Do you know that company's name?
Cirque du Soleil?
Right.
Yeah.
So it is how you take a business. So for me at Anthem, we did voice signatures. That's pretty common today. But one of the complaints people that buy individual health insurance was it takes 30 days. I lost my job. I need insurance. And so we were able to get 14 states to approve a voice signature. There's more identifiers in the voice than a retina scan. It became a way that they could say their name 4 times. We'd pick it up, and we could get them going. And it turned our time frames down to 3 and 5 days from 30 days. Papa John's, we used that really with online ordering. It had existed, but I was selling insurance online for $500 a month. I thought I could sell a $10 pizza. So we put a lot of money behind that. We met with Mark Zuckerberg, and we met with Google, and we started changing how we did. And at 2008, 8% of their sales were online. But the average ticket went from $18 to $22.50 online. Well, today, as I listen to Steve and the guys over there at Papa John's, over 60%. So in 10 years, but the Apple phone came about. So, and we're doing that. We like to think here, we've added vision to Delta Dental, and we bought a mouth guard company called Game On. And it's the only American Dental Association accepted mouth guard in the world because of its shock absorbency. It saves teeth. So the polymer it's made of is called Vistamax. Vistamax makes car bumpers, stents for bypass on arteries, the outer lining of a baby's diaper, it's hydrophobic, and mask for surgical mask, and it's in orbit chewing gum. So there are different grades, but this mouth guard company we bought, we really think that it has the potential, and I'm going to tell you a little secret. It's putting a wet paper towel in a microwave for 45 seconds. You don't boil water, and you hold it in your mouth, and it'll find the anatomy of your teeth over about a minute, and it'll shrink about 5% the next 5 hours. So it takes two fingers to pop off. As soon as we heard that, we knew if we could put a pigment in it, like a mood ring or a thermometer, mm-hmm. that young athlete at Maryland that died. So I can show you a video of where our mouth guard is now. We'll change colors when your temp hits 102, and a wow. trainer or someone will know this athlete's in wow. trouble. So we think wow. that's blue ocean. There's wow. 500 mouth guards out there.
Wow.
Because they fall out in their EVA plastic like this water bottle. You can't read a temperature if you keep chewing on it. It's got to go up. So last night, the Clemson quarterback that won the national, mm-hmm. he wears that mouth guard. So he had our mouth guard last night in the national
cool.
championship.
So that's pretty yeah. cool.
The Clemson uses it. So we're excited, but we've got to go make sure the pigment is safe, go through the FDA. So we've got to probably 6 months of trials on that, but mm-hmm. we will do it.
Wow. That's so cool. And I think that's such an interesting lesson, whether you're talking about a company or maybe even an individual leader, but kind of finding your niche, I think is such an important thing.
We didn't get off onto when the mouth guard company, when our CEO retired, I was on the board. I wasn't working. March of 17, I came in here. And people were obviously a little nervous, and it took 6 months, 1 week, before they made a decision. I was not interested, but I said, Jude, if you would be interested in this job, what would you blue ocean with it? Mm. And I shared with you earlier, I had a son that just won a state championship at football, had a football scholarship, and we went up to pick up his success manual. They had pregame, aftergame uniforms, helmets, everything beautiful, gloves. They had a lot of giveaway, no mouth guard. Hmm. And so I called Mitch Barnhart, the athletic director of UK. I said, do you have a mouth guard sponsor? He goes, I do not. And so that's when I started my research, and we found this company that was founded by a dentist and a polymer chemist who teaches at Rutgers, and they're the ones that created, and they're still with us. And so they help us do what we do.
That is so cool. So interesting. And my brain wouldn't even go there, you know? So that's so cool. How did you, and you know, we've kind of dug into it a little bit, but how did you find work that you were passionate about? You know, I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with, trying to find what that is. Like, what was it for you? What indicators, or how did you know you were on the right path?
So it's a little bit, you know, when I shared the thing about what I do is who I am, I adopt my work as a part of me, which I need to keep a healthy wall up. So, but I've been fortunate with Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield, the U.S.'s largest, most recognized health insurance, Papa John's third largest pizza chain. I believed in those, and Delta Dental is the largest dental insurer in the U.S. and in Kentucky. So I've been fortunate to associate with brands I believe in. I don't think anyone can get passionate about something if you don't believe in it. You know, I look at what you're all doing down there. That's passionate. What you're doing for those young folks and helping people less fortunate, that would stir up a passion. And so when I talk to my children or I talk to younger people, and we try to do it as much as possible, if someone wants to chat, we'll do it, because it's hard. I didn't wake up. My father forced me to say, you know, what are you going to do to make a living? And I was like, I'm not going to be an NBA player. And I said, well, I like pizza. And yeah. I said, so I love pizza, so let's build a pizza business. And so that was a little bit of how it worked for me. But I would just say, if your heart's not in it, and I understand everyone's circumstances that you got bills to pay and you've got things to do, but ultimately spend some free time trying to figure out what industry you could get passionate about, mm-hmm. what business. And I can't be passionate if I'm working with people I don't enjoy, or they're not doing things the right way. And I enjoy these folks. Mm. They're really good here.
Mm. What about, would you say, and I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but would you say are there benchmarks to know either you're on the right track or you're definitely not on the right track?
Yeah, if you get up in the morning and you call in sick a lot. you know, if in the 2 hours you wake up and you're not excited, I love to come in. Mm. I enjoy it. And I enjoyed it when I was in my 20s and 30s and 40s, and now I'm in my 50s. And so I think we were intended to work a little bit. Mm. Fun times fun, and I like that, but I enjoy my work. I view it as a puzzle, and people say, do you like puzzles? I said, I never really played them, but business is one of these things where we get to drop a piece, a new piece into the equation every day, and it starts to look like an answer or a picture. So, and I love the whole team concept. I love the idea that if my folks that I work with trust me and they know that I mean them no harm, that we're going to pick the rope up and we're going to pull it in the same direction, because we've got real competitors. We've got people that sell exactly what we do. They have money and they have people. Some have more money. So, but if I could cut down on any infighting or fear or, you know, is he going to not do good for us or that, that's all we have. We have our people. And our average tenured associate, we've been in business 52 years. We have 3 associates with over 40 years.
Oh, wow.
15 over 30. Our average tenure is 19 years here. So it's a unique place. We only have 75 employees. We have 725,000 Kentuckians we take care of. Now, we have to hire advertising agencies and PR firms. We just don't have the money to do that. Most people don't realize we're a not-for-profit. We're a 501c4. All Deltas are. Delta Dental must be that way. So your organization, Home of the Innocents, we were so honored to be able to partner with you all and participate in your dental clinic, and that's what we should be doing. And, you know, last year we were able to give $1.6 million to 58 organizations in the state of Kentucky, and we feel good about that. And one thing I did this year, or I did with my, I wanted all 75 employees to know how it feels to be generous, and so we let them direct $1,000 to the charity of their choice in their name.
That's such a cool idea.
Yeah. So it's good. It feels good when you help people less fortunate. Whoever came up with is better to give than receive, they are right. I think they are right. So, awesome. We did that, and it went really well. People, you know, we have some folks that never been in a position to be able to do that.
Yeah. That's so cool. So cool. Love that. What about, so same thing, you know, I'm sure you have a lot of natural inspiration, like internally I can tell, but what do you do when you find yourself in times where you're not, you know, it's difficult, it's maybe you're flagging a little bit, how do you find that inspiration again?
So I had this, you know, Leave It to Beaver childhood. You're too young to maybe know what that is, but it was just very, I'm very fortunate. My parents were very, you know, upbeat people. They believed in the good in people, and that doesn't mean good comes out of us all the time, but we were rewarded for good behavior, and when I say that, being good citizens and trying to be productive, and I tell my children, I tell people here, I was always taught when you walk into a room, you leave it better than you found it. And so for me, one thing that happens is I have been so fortunate when my eyes open, I'm thankful. I don't want people to think I have a trouble-free life. I you know, my tires go flat and I get in car wrecks occasionally. Yeah. I got in a speeding ticket before, you know, I mean, the things are going to happen that you're disappointed. But in the end, I look at it as a basket, and I have so many nice things to be thankful for, and I don't dwell on those. So inspiration for me is you know, I shared with you, I have 5 children, and we were able to adopt the last 3. Our first child we adopted was from Cambodia, changed my whole life. Seeing her, you know, just knowing that my heart was bigger than I thought, it was amazing. And then 9/11 happened, we actually put in for 2, we couldn't go back there. We put in for a girl a few years later from Ethiopia, and they said she had a brother. And I'm like, where? And they said, in the orphanage, and he was 6. They said, do you want them both? And I'm like, yes. and so as time would go on, when you see that and you see your 2 older children, how quickly that comes together, so it's a real blessing. So I just try to focus on the things that are there, I don't work for money. I work for my family and my dreams. I have another saying, money is a terrible master, but a wonderful servant. Mm. So I don't work for money. Mm. I work for dreams. And if I do well at it, then I can do nice things for my family and for people I care for, to this company. I will tell you this too, Scott, there are no way for me to get a bonus here and they don't get one. Mm. And vice versa. Our goals are there's directly aligned. Mm. Because I couldn't do it. I mean, we'll celebrate together and we'll figure out why we didn't do as well as we could have together in the same case. But we've been very fortunate. 2 years ago was a record year. Last year was a record year. And we'll break this year based on our just being able to take care of customers and more people voting with their feet to come to us. And so that allows us to make them feel comfortable because they're the ones doing it.
Right. Okay. what about, so the next question, I ask it this way on purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's instructive. We've all had our moments of failure, but do you have a favorite? What would you say is your favorite failure?
Well, when you're right in the middle of failing, you don't ever call them good, and they hurt.
Yeah.
But I think when I look back at my career, one of the things, and I was relatively young, when Blue Cross Blue Shield of Kentucky and Blue Cross Blue Shield of Indiana merged, that was the first two Blues to ever do that. There were 110 Blue Cross plans. There were three in Ohio. So we had started this process of consolidating. Health insurance costs were going up, and ultimately I got to see all 14 Blue Cross plans come together, and I was a part of it on each one of those. And you can make some assumptions, and I did, which hurt our company, hurt some people and myself, is that just because they say they're Blue Cross Blue Shield of Colorado, and we're one part of a big family, and now they're a part of us, they're going to behave the same way, or California, or Maine, or New York. We had all of those states, Wisconsin. And I took an approach that I wouldn't recommend, that this is the cookie cutter approach. Mm. This is what the people had come from different experiences. And I probably heard a few folks, including myself, thinking that, you know, you could just sign up and you'd be like the ones before you. Not the case at all. And so really geographic territory can make a big difference. I remember the difference between my employees in Cincinnati and Cleveland. It's a huge cultural difference. What you would call, I guess, more of a touchy-feely demonstrative. That really freaked out some of my employees in Cleveland. They didn't know what was going on, so I had to tone it down a little bit. And so Cincinnati, it flies, but not so much not in Cleveland.
Okay. that's great. Okay. Yeah, I think that's, a similar thing as so many people find themselves in it is just the realization that you have to treat everybody differently.
Yeah, well, it's a know your audience. Mm. What you're talking about, but you need to try to do as much background check. What had they gone through? You know, I'm on a private equity company's board, and I have the good fortune of being on two of their other company boards they had. And we just bought one of the largest, or it is the largest, Jiffy Lube franchisee. It's 562 stores. In the last, so there's a lot of employees. In the last 10 years, they've had 8 CEOs. Hmm. Well, it's not been good. You don't have to be an MBA to realize that that's too much change. And so our new CEO and the board of directors, it's all about calming things down. We need some consistency. So when you see stuff like that, you just can't come in and start ripping and roaring. There's some, it's like the analogy that person has a gunshot wound and he falls down, and you walk into the emergency room, they said, well, you scraped your knee, let me fix that up. That's not what's really hurting me.
Right.
You know, there's something deeper and bigger. So that's business.
Hmm.
You gotta do like a doctor would do. You gotta make an inventory. You gotta diagnose what the real issue is.
Mm-hmm. What about? I'm always interested in this. Do you have a process sort of for how you make your biggest decisions when those really challenging ones? What do you find yourself doing?
So, I now have the good fortune of being in business a few years. And so you've got some experience, and it's not always when it worked well, it's when it, the failures we just talked about. But I also have the good fortune of having executives that I trust that think differently than me. I don't want people like me in every position that I want them to be different thinkers because I have blind spots. I have the good fortune of having a board of directors too that have a lot of different experience. Sometimes just because we're in it right here, it's nice to have someone that understands our business, but also is removed enough that wouldn't get emotional. It's hard when you adopt a company as a part of you, and then to try to make all the clear-headed decisions. It's not easy. So I don't go out for a lot of advice, but I will seek the appropriate advice, and I have no issues with measuring twice before we cut, because if they're that important, we should spend the time and we should toil over it. We should torment ourselves a little bit. It's a big, because the issues is, you know, we've got people's livelihoods, we've got families that depend on this. So that's the way I look at it. A big decision means what's the upside, but what's the downside? And does anyone get hurt here if I don't do this well? And so we have to evaluate that.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. What about, so the last question I always like to, so let's pretend that people have ignored all of the other wisdom that you've shared today. You forgot everything. What is one thing that a leader should never forget?
To me, is humility. And it is so easy to sit on a fat wallet and think that your self-worth is more because you've made money. And I never think of money like that. It's people. And so know that it's important to do the little things. I walk around a lot, and when I was the interim, evidently that wasn't the status, because on about the third week I walked around, someone said, "Are you gonna fire us?" And I'm like, "Why? Well, why do you walk around?" I said, "Just to say hi and to see what you're doing and try to learn." So it was really important that for me, you know, the whole thing where you can see my office, I wanted it inviting. I want people to come in, whether they want to grab a bottle of water or they want to chat, always an open door. That door was all wood. I made them put glass in it. I don't like it like that. I want people to approach me. If we were talking baseball, I just happen to play one position. I need 9 positions covered. And for us to win, everyone has to cover their base, their position, and I respect that. And so that's, if I were a leader, just people are human capital, man. It's the joys you'll get out of it, but don't mistreat it, and don't get too full of yourself, I guess.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for being so open and willing to share. And I mean, I'm so appreciative. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Scott. And I hope this hits home for someone.
Thanks again to our special guest. This has been Learning from Leaders.